It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
The tenant probably ought to call a sheriff, among other things, or the police, because the landlord has no right to shut the tenant out. The tenant has a right to be in the unit, and forcing him out is a violation of the law.
Attorney Jim Nagles talks about what tenants can do when facing eviction and how best they can protect themselves. You'll also find out how to protect yourself if you can't get your car back from the repair shop until you pay the bill during our question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. This show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Survivors of domestic violence often face difficulty getting protective orders enforced against abusers who continue to threaten or injure them and defy the courts. One problem has been that law enforcement officers have not had easy access to those orders. No more. Last fall, a statewide group of Virginia legal aid attorneys formed to get a legislative change requiring all courts to promptly enter protective orders into the Virginia Criminal Information Network. As of July 1, 2008, the law was changed to say, quote, "The court shall forthwith, but in all cases no later than the end of the business day on which the order was issued, enter and transfer identifying information provided to the court electronically to the Virginia Criminal Information Network." This change should make it far easier for survivors of domestic violence to enforce their protective orders. In other news, this spring, a federal audit found 674 low-income families in Richmond didn't get housing, although money and apartments were available because the Richmond Redevelopment and Housing Authority, or RRHA, managed its waiting list so poorly. RRHA administers Section 8 housing vouchers. This program helps very low-income people rent by paying the difference between what the family can afford and the market rent. RRHA has 3,147 vouchers, but only 2,473 are being used. Despite a waiting list of more than 8,000, and despite $7.5 million in voucher funds in the bank, RRHA issued only 111 vouchers in the past 5 years, and none in the past 2 years. City Councilman Marty Jewell says, quote, "It's outrageous with the growing number of homeless people we have in the city. Although the problems have been known for years, the voucher waiting list remains closed to new applicants." With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Turn me around, turn me around, turn me around, gonna let discrimination turn Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio.
This week's legal term of the week is unlawful detainer. An unlawful detainer is a court case filed to legally evict a tenant. A landlord starts an unlawful detainer action by filing a summons for unlawful detainer. Although this court paper is called an unlawful detainer, it is not used in a criminal case. It is used only in a civil case. The court paper must be served on or legally delivered to the tenant. The paper tells the date, time, and place of the court hearing, and the amount of money the landlord claims. The hearing is the tenant's chance to contest the eviction and the claim for money. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Term of the Week.
If you're just joining us, this is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. Each week, we have a question and answer session dealing with some area of non-criminal civil law, and we have our questioner in the studio with us. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Ann, and Richmond is my home.
Great, Ann. What question do you have for us this week?
I want to ask a question about mechanics' rights on your vehicle and the title of your vehicle when the work has been done and you don't have all the money to pay them.
Is this something that happened to you recently?
Yes, it did. It's happening to me now. I've had my vehicle at a mechanic's place, and they've completed the work, and the agreement was I was going to pay them the total amount of the job that they did. But at the time, at the due date, I did not have the money, and I went and spoke with the gentleman. Now, both of them were not there. Just one of them was there, and I spoke with him, and he verbally told me that it was all right, that I could take my time in paying them. And then 2 days later, I received a phone call, and a message was left on my voicemail. The other gentleman called me and told me that he was pursuing my title to my car with DMV.
One final question before I try to answer this. Have you received anything in writing from the mechanic or from the garage?
I received the total amount of the bill was written on the back of a Wawa receipt.
But that's all? You've not received any type of a notice or demand letter or something that tells you what they intend to do?
No, not from them, only from DMV.
Okay, well, Ann, that's actually a good sign because it shows that the mechanic is not attempting at this time to enforce the mechanic's lien by selling your vehicle. A mechanic's lien and other types of liens are created by statute. A lien is nothing more than a fancy legal word for a claim. In this case, the mechanic has a claim on your vehicle. I mean, you own your vehicle, and normally when you own a piece of property, nobody has the right to take it from you or to withhold it from you if it happens to be in their possession. But the law carves out an exception for a mechanic who has done repairs on your vehicle at your request, or for that matter, for a garage that is storing your vehicle for you at your request. And even though you own the vehicle and legally have the right to the vehicle, the mechanic who's repaired your vehicle, or for that matter, the garage that's been storing your vehicle, they have a legal right to get paid. And they have a right to hold on to your vehicle and keep it from you. Even though it's your vehicle and you own it, they have the right to hold on to your vehicle and keep it from you until you pay them. So it's kind of a standoff. If you don't have the money to pay them now, hopefully you'll have the money to pay them shortly. You will be able to get your vehicle back and go about your business. If, however, you just don't have the money and the mechanic or the garage wants to get paid, this particular statute, the mechanic's lien statute or the garageman's lien statute, allows them to go through a process to sell your vehicle. Even though you're the owner, they can sell the vehicle and they can use the money from the sale to pay them what they're owed. And then if there's anything left over, of course, you're entitled to the excess. Now, the law does build some protections in for you. And in this particular case, if they're going to sell your vehicle, they have to give you, the owner, notice of that at least 10 days in advance, either by personal delivery, that would be probably by a deputy sheriff or a process server delivering a notice to you, or by certified or registered mail. And that's a guarantee that you actually received the notice in advance of the sale. Since you haven't received that yet, that's a good sign. And it's a standoff right now. You have the right to the vehicle. They have the right to the money. They have the right to hold your vehicle until they get paid. And I know you're working on trying to get the money to pay them. As soon as you do, get down there, pay them the charges, the reasonable charges. They can't really charge you anything unreasonable, and then get your vehicle back. If by some chance they want to charge you some unreasonable sum and say, you must pay us this unreasonable sum, otherwise we're holding your vehicle, you do have a remedy. You could go to court and file a warrant in detinue, D-E-T-I-N-U-E, and you would bring to court basically the amount that you think is a reasonable charge and let the judge decide whether they can hold your vehicle for the unreasonable charge or whether they have to turn over your vehicle once you pay the reasonable charge.
Wow.
Law does get complicated. Thank you so much, Ann, for your question today. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright, and we're here at the Virginia Poverty Law Center with attorney Jim Nagels, who specializes in housing law issues. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Marty. I'm glad to be here.
And we're going to be talking today about eviction cases, or as they're known in the law, unlawful detainers. Let's start at the beginning, Jim. What type of a notice does a landlord have to give in order to evict a tenant?
Okay, Marty, usually the landlord has to give a 5-day pay or quit notice initially. Usually that's in a case where the rent is late. The notice will say that if you don't pay within 5 days, you're going to be subject to legal action. It doesn't mean you have to get out at the end of 5 days. It just means that legal action will commence if you don't.
And is a landlord's oral, verbal, spoken notice to move any good? Or does it have to be in writing?
It has to be in writing in order for it to be, in order for it to be adequate proof that it's been given.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a 5-day notice if it's a non-payment of rent case. What if the landlord wants to evict the tenant for some other reason, for some conduct or behavior or a belief that the tenant has broken the lease? What type of notice would the landlord have to give there?
Well, the landlord has to give 21 days notice in case the action is something that can be corrected. You correct it within 21 days or you're going to have to be out within 30. The other type is a notice that you get in case the problem is not correctable. And in that case, you're going to have to get out within 30 days. And that's the notice that you get.
Okay. Well, what if it's an emergency situation where the tenant is doing something that's like immediately destructive or something where the landlord feels the landlord can't even wait 30 days? What type of notice would be required there?
Well, then the landlord has to give reasonable notice. It depends on what the situation is. If the tenant's doing something that's going to cause the place to burst into flames or to flood out, the landlord certainly doesn't have to give him 21 days notice. He can give him 2 days, for that matter. It's just a matter of how critical the situation is.
Okay. But am I correct that no matter what type of notice the landlord gives, the tenant is not required to move within that notice period? That's simply the time period for the landlord to wait, before the landlord starts the unlawful detainer action. Is that?
That's correct, Marty. What's ultimately going to determine that the tenant has to get out is the order from the court.
Okay. So how does the landlord actually start the unlawful detainer? What are the steps in that process?
Well, the landlord will first of all gather whatever information he needs to show that the tenant is doing whatever he's not doing, whether he's not paying the rent, whether he's damaging the property, whatever is going to cause the landlord to want the tenant to leave. After the notice, the landlord will go into the court and go to the clerk's office, and he'll get or file a warrant of debt, a UD, what they call an unauthorized detainer, whatever is appropriate. At that point, the hearing is set, and it's an initial hearing. At that point, the tenant can elect whether he wants to go into court and contest the case, or whether he wants to not show up, in which case he gets a default judgment against him without having contested the matter.
And would you ever advise a tenant not to show up for a court on an unlawful detainer summons?
I would advise the tenant to show up almost all the time, unless he just determines that there's no way he can fight. He's done what the landlord accuses him of doing. He might consider that. But normally, I would tell the tenant to show up in order to avoid a default judgment.
Okay. And if the landlord gets a default judgment, what would be the next step in the process for the landlord?
Next, he would get an order from the court that would allow him to go to the sheriff and tell the sheriff, I want this person evicted. So I'm going to go over there. I would like you to come with me so that nothing happens as a result of my doing something by myself. And that's how it happens, more or less. The sheriff shows up. The person's materials are moved out, if he hasn't already moved them out. And that's sort of the end of the process. You're out of the unit.
Okay. Well, now, what if the tenant does have a defense to the unlawful detainer? What should the tenant do at the very first court hearing?
The tenant should show up and say, well, I'm contesting this. I've paid this already. If he has the things or the information he needs to show that he's actually done it, sometimes the trial or the hearing will take place right there. But most of the time, he will have it set for another period of time, another hearing, and that's when he brings his evidence in and any witnesses he might have.
Now, do people need attorneys in general district court when they are contesting an unlawful detainer, or is this something they can do on their own?
It's something they can do on their own unless there's a matter of having to assign or file certain legal documents. If, for example, a tenant wants to have someone present evidence or present arguments about how the matter arose, what evidence they have, et cetera, then attorneys get involved. But ordinarily, tenants can handle this themselves.
Okay. Well, let's say it's a non-payment of rent case, and the tenant has not been paying rent because the housing conditions are very poor. The tenant's been withholding the rent. Is that something the tenant's going to be able to present to court as a defense to the landlord's claim?
Well, there's a situation or a condition where you can withhold rent, but you have to go through what's called a tenant's assertion. If there's a condition that you have been suffering because of the landlord's negligence, for example, you can give the landlord a certain amount of notice, a reasonable amount of time to correct it. You take that over to, after you've given the landlord time, you take that over to the clerk's office and you tell the clerk, basically, I want to put my rent into escrow. At that point, you can put your rent into the court rather than paying it to the landlord. And until the hearing is held about the issue that's underlying, the clerk's office will hold that money, and at the hearing, the judge will either award it to the landlord, or he'll keep it, or he'll give it back to the tenant, depending on the outcome.
Well, let's now that you mentioned a notice that has to be given to the landlord by the tenant if the conditions are poor. Does that notice also have to be in writing, just like the landlord's notice to the tenant?
It should be. It's a matter of being able to prove that you went that you gave notice to the landlord. If you really want to go over the top, you can do it with certified mail, so that you can be sure that it was delivered anyway. But by all means, it ought to be in writing.
Now, let's assume that the tenant has given the landlord some type of written notice of poor conditions and is in waiting a reasonable period of time for the conditions to be fixed. And the landlord decides, well, I'm just going to go ahead and file this unlawful detainer, this eviction case. Can the tenant at that point, as a defense, pay the money, the rent money into court?
Yes, the tenant can. One of the things that protects the tenant is the fact that the tenant can put the money into court without fear of retribution from the landlord. Landlord might try it, but it's not something that's allowed under the law. So yes, the tenant can go ahead and put his rent into escrow if he believes that a condition exists that warranted his not paying or whatever.
So it sounds like there's no real rent withholding in Virginia, but that if there is rent in dispute, the tenant better hang on to it and be prepared to pay it into court, whether
That's
it's
right.
the tenant bringing the landlord to court or the landlord bringing the tenant to court.
That's correct, Marty. There's no such thing as a rent strike in Virginia. You can't just stop paying your rent because you want the landlord to correct something. You have to go through the proper procedures in court, and then you're protected against retribution.
What about not withholding your rent, but making the repairs yourself and then deducting the cost of the repairs from the rent? Are you allowed to do that in Virginia?
No, you can't. What you have to do is, if you're going to make the repairs yourself, then you demand from the landlord the payment for them. You don't just withhold the rent. That won't fly in Virginia.
Okay. Well, is a landlord allowed to proceed outside of court? In other words, is a landlord allowed to lock out a tenant or shut off utilities or evict the tenant himself? Assume that, say, the tenant is in default on the lease because of non-payment of rent or some other reason. Is the landlord permitted to do any of those things?
No, the landlord's not. That's against the provisions of the Virginia Residential Landlord and Tenant Act. That would be referred to as constructive eviction. And that's not something that's allowed under the Residential Landlord and Tenant Act in Virginia.
Okay. So if a tenant is, in fact, locked out or utilities cut off or the landlord tries to evict the tenant himself, what should the tenant do?
The tenant probably ought to call a sheriff, among other things, or the police, because the landlord has no right to shut the tenant out. The tenant has a right to be in the unit, and forcing him out is basically, well, it's a violation of the law. So it's not something a landlord has a right to do, and a tenant has to have some way of getting immediate relief.
Now, one of the things that we often advise people to do is to keep something on the tenant's person, whether the copy of the lease or a rent receipt, just to show that they really lawfully are a tenant there. Is that something that you would recommend to folks?
That's something I would recommend. People wouldn't ordinarily do that, but it's something that protects you from that sort of procedure or thing that the landlord might do.
Well, Jim, that was very helpful. We've been talking with Jim Nackles at the Virginia Poverty Law Center about evictions and unlawful detainers. Thank you for being on the show, Jim.
You're welcome, Marty.
We're back with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio.
This week's top three tips are about eviction. The first tip is that you don't have to move just because your landlord says so, orally or in writing, or even if your landlord files an eviction case in court. Only a judge can order you to leave. The second tip is to go to court in all eviction cases. If you go, you get at least 10 more days to move. If you don't go, you don't get the 10 days and the writ of possessions allowing a sheriff deputy to evict you can be issued right away. The third tip is that once a writ of possession has been issued and delivered to you, The sheriff's deputy only has to wait 72 hours to evict you. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week's, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free, civil, legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered on this show, email that question to marty@cvlas.org with radio show question in the subject line. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Our nation, our state, and our city of Richmond face an incoming tidal wave of mortgage foreclosures. Every day, 8,000 Americans lose their home to foreclosure. Preying on the misfortune of others, foreclosure rescue scams continue to multiply. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, attorney Henry McLaughlin, describes how to spot these scams, avoid them, or deal with them if you're trapped in them. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrink.
Oh.